This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Okay, hour two, Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, as we welcome you back. We go coast to coast. I'm Patrick Maher. He, of course, is Michael Lombardi. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We hope you had a nice weekend. By the way, before we get to Geno Smith and Drew Locke, did you hear Vegas has a new visitor, and he's only been in town for about 12 hours, and he's an expert on Las Vegas. Can you guess who that is?
It can only be the one Will Hill. I'm sure he's probably now, as he come over to run South Point, he's probably running South Point Circuit. Tell Derek Stevens to watch out. He's probably running eight casinos right now, along with three leagues. I mean, I don't know how he's going to do it.
He is the host of our New York City cast, VSiN.com/podcast. You can find GM Shuffle over there as well. But, of course, Will Hill, who is an expert in a myriad of ways, and he is now here in Vegas, so watch out as he looks to run the town. Now, who's going to run the quarterback position there with Seattle? So Pete Carroll, after the 32-25 defeat to the Steelers, said, as it turned out, and you didn't love the situation for Seattle traveling across the country, we'll get to that, but he said, as it turned out for both guys, it was a good outing because they had a lot of pressure on them to have to get things done, and they played well. We're coming from behind, and he goes on to laud both Smith and, of course, Drew Locke. Let's start with Smith, who started slow, but then under 2 minutes to play, got that touchdown, ended up, what, 3 of 5, 36 yards during the 9-play, 61-2-minute drill, which you like to see, and finished finding the end zone on a 2-yard scramble. What did you think of Geno Smith week one?
You know, I felt like, again, it's a backup. He's a starting guy, played in the league, going against a lot of the backups there. So it was not quite a great outing, you know. And then when Drew came in, it was the third string, so the game was a lot slower. Pittsburgh wasn't doing a whole lot defensively. They were just trying to get through the game and give their guys a chance to execute. I think this next week for Geno and for Drew Locke is going to have to heat it up. I think we'll see, you know, if they practice with somebody. I don't know. But, you know, right now, they, you know, when they go, they'll play a home game, which will give them some time. They won't be on the road. They won't have to worry about the travel, all that stuff. So give them a chance to do it. They host the Bears. You know, they should know the Eberflus scheme will be perfect for them. It'll be cover three. And we'll probably know by next week what they're going to do. I would be surprised if Drew Locke plays well in that game. Just because I know Drew Locke has an advocate in the building, I would think he could win that job.
Interesting. I'm glad you brought that up.
They play Thursday, Patrick. Patrick, they play Thursday.
Yep. They you nailed it. So that's the one game on Thursday night, Chicago at Seattle. It tough scheduling spot for Seattle to travel back. You mentioned Seattle open 3. Most books have them 3.5, including DraftKings and BetMGM. But, yes, that's coming up on Thursday. Would you call the Seattle quarterback race tighter than the Carolina quarterback race?
Yeah, I call it tighter. I would. I would because I think there's probably some, you know, decisions that have to be. I mean, Geno played last year for them, locked it, and Geno actually won a game for them last year. So he's got some in-house love, whereas Locke has, you know, he's comes with some fanfare. I'm not watching practice, so I don't know how they've looked in practice, but I would suspect this game against Chicago, they'll heat it up a little bit and see where it goes. But look, they're playing with two new tackles too, the cross kid at left tackle. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in Seattle.
And that's why their win total set at 5.5. I'll get you the number as far as the juice on the total. So one thing you mentioned yesterday that I don't know if many know, so if you missed it, what you said about Drew Locke is interesting, and maybe that general manager would like to see him starting. Can you give us the connection there?
Well, you know, what happens is, you know, when you're scouting, you always kind of, you scout everybody, right? And so you have I want to draft this guy. We didn't get to him. Denver beat us to him. I would have liked to have drafted Drew Locke. John Schneider, the general manager, who I think does a really good job in Seattle, he's kind of an independent thinker. He's never going to get A's in his draft because he goes against conventional wisdom and he doesn't really tell anybody what he's doing. So his drafts are never always, you know, looked at with that AI in them, you know. know. So, but he's different, and he does a good job. He's done a really good job of building a team. They won a Super Bowl. They competed for another one. Now they've lost a little bit of their luster over the years, but, you know, that happens in this cap era. But he loved Locke coming out. And part of the reason that he traded, they got rid of Russell, is because they really wanted Locke back in that deal. You know, I saw it as a throw-in. I think they saw it as an asset. We shall see. You know, and I respect John enough to say, okay, I'll watch this and see if I'm wrong. Because, you know, what does he know that I don't know?
Okay. We'll see, of course, the Seahawks in action, like Michael said, coming up this Thursday with Chicago in town. Should be a good opportunity to take a look at both Geno Smith and Drew Locke. Just a quick transition, then we're going to get with our guests and the Commanders. I wanted to bring up a team. We were talking about, obviously, the division with the Raiders a little bit earlier. Can we talk about the Broncos, who are plus 260 in AFC West? And I bring it up because, in particular, I wanted to point out the wide receivers. On paper, if you just take a look at the Denver Bronco wide receiver depth chart, you're like, damn, that's good. But remember, a couple weeks ago, they lost Tim Patrick. That was 50-plus catches last year. Cortland Sutton hasn't really bounced back from the 2020 ACL, Michael. Jerry Jeudy, okay. How about KJ Hamler, who had the ACL in week 3, I believe it was, last year? So while there's a lot of talent here for Russell Wilson to work with, there are some questions with a lot of talent.
Yeah, and they look pure West Coast, Patrick. Pure West Coast. I mean, sprint left option on 3rd and 2, sprint right option. I mean, to the play call. They're going to run this West Coast. It's going to be as if Bill Walsh were running it from day one install. That's what they're going to do. And, you know, they're going to need to get some of these guys going. They're going to need to get Jeudy to make plays yards after the catch. You know, I think the Patrick injury really affects them. I really do. I think he was a big-time player for them. I was impressed in watching their game against Dallas with Josh Johnson. You know, the guy's been on 100 teams, right? Yeah. University of San Diego, from inner city Oakland. Jim Harbaugh recruited him down to San Diego. But the kid's got some savvy to him. He made a couple great throws in the game. I liked him. I was going into that thinking, well, they're going to need a backup quarterback. I think they have one in Johnson. I thought he played better than some of these other backups. He certainly played better than Cooper Rush did for the Cowboys. So, look, I mean, Denver's going to rely on the scheme. They're going to rely on Russell. The key for Russell is he going to make plays with his feet? Is he going to move around? Is he going to buy a second look? You know, is he going to do the things that he has to do? And can they protect him without holding? You know, the two tackles, Bowles and Turner, to me are a little bit – I know they signed Bowles to an extension, but Bowles has been known to hold quite a bit. And so that offensive line's got to really hold up for Russell.
Well, you mentioned Josh Johnson, who's 36, and he still looks spry. He can move around a little bit, obviously. Yeah, he really does. You know what's fascinating? He is the answer to a trivia question. Who's played on the most teams? 13 years in the NFL, he's played on 15 different teams, Josh Johnson.
And you know why I liked him in the game? Because Josh Johnson was born and raised on the West Coast offense with Jim Harbaugh at San Diego. Like, he's playing in a scheme that he knows, he's comfortable with, and you could just feel it on the tape that his execution, he knew where he was going to go with the football. He kind of had a sense of it. He made plays. He moved. I mean, look, I'm not saying he's great. Look, Baltimore last year, he did a couple things, kind of falls apart at the end. But as a backup, to go in there and get you out of a game, I thought it was a good – I thought he played well enough to do that.
Yeah, we're not saying he's great, but you know what? He's been collecting NFL checks for 13 years, and he must be a good dude because teams want to continue to sign him, even as it is an advanced age. So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, look, this Denver team is interesting. I've been in love with Denver's team for 3 years, and they've let me down because I think they've had a good team. This combination of runners that they have with Williams and Gordon is powerful, you know, and with this offense, the way they're going to do it with the West Coast, they can be, if they get good play out of Russell, they're going to be tough. Defensively, again, you know, Randy Gregory's got to stay on the field. He's got to behave. The DJ Jones kid. Now, sometimes when they leave that off, that defensive line coach in San Francisco and they go somewhere else, they're not as effective. That D-line coach in San Francisco is the best D-line coach in all of football. There's not a doubt in my mind. He gets those guys to play at the highest level. I don't know the guy. I've never met him. But if I got back in the league, he'd be the first guy I'd hire. Just to coach the D-line,
really?
Because he's truly one of those guys that makes a difference in the team. He makes a difference. And when you watch him and they get these guys from some other team, they play better for him than anywhere else. Kyle's his first name. I forgot his last name.
Yeah, but he's or is
really
it Chris?
Chris? Chris, yeah, Chris. Maybe? He begins with a It's a KK name, yeah. He was from Texas Tech. But I'm just telling you, DJ Jones was fabulous for him last year. Now, I'm thinking he's going to play like that, and I got to be careful because he might not be the same player. But with Gregory, DJ Jones, Bradley Chubb, they should be able to be a more effective team defensively than they were last year.
Well, the expectations, Michael, they're obviously sky high. You've got Russell Wilson in tow. They won 7 games last year, and their win total sitting at DraftKings at 10. I mean, the expectations are there for Hackett in his first year.
No doubt. No doubt. And it's his first year. And we'll see what they can do. First year for him, first year for the coordinator. You know, there's a lot of things that have to come. Dwayne Stucks, the special teams coach, he's got, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here. But they should have a home field advantage, which they haven't had in the last couple seasons.
Everything I see from Hackett whenever he speaks, I'm always impressed. Just in a minute here, do you know anything of Hackett as potentially becoming a good head coach here?
Well, I mean, I know his dad really well. And I started the National Football League with his father, and I know his dad, and I'm sure he'll rely on his dad for a lot of help and a lot of guidance as he tries to navigate this. He's lived through it. His dad was a head coach at University of Pittsburgh at Southern Cal. So, you know, I think he's going to have a lot of help there. And, you know, I don't know what the organization's going to look like because it appears like they're in some form of a transition.
10 wins, that's the win total. They're third in division, that tough division, the Denver Broncos. Questions for me at the wide receiver position to see how those players bounce back. Al Galdi, we talked about the Commanders. He hosts the Commanders podcast for the Washington Post, and he joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, of course, the VSiN College Football Guide is out now, and our NFL guide drops next week. This is important because remember, the only way to get access to this year's football betting guides, both of them, is to become a VSiN All Access subscriber. It's pretty simple to do, and if you do it right now, you're going to get a discount. Everything we offer through the Super Bowl for $175, it's ridiculously cheap. Save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Go to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe for more information. Remember, you're saving 50% right now. Make sure you do it. Invest a little to win a lot, okay? So go check it out, vsin.com/subscribe. We are efforting for Al Galdi, who hosts a podcast there in Washington, featured in the Washington Post, about the Commanders. Let me just say this. They lost 23-21. Who cares? Sam Howell seemed to be the buzz coming out of the game. But I will bring this up, Michael. Remember, they drafted Brian Robinson Jr. out of Alabama. Antonio Gibson, who's not a pure running back, but had a nice year, but he's had an issue with dropping the football, had another fumble, and that's going to be a concern for the Commanders because he's supposed to be a big part of that offense.
Yeah, I mean, look, they were physical. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they played with physicality, sweat, the defensive. I mean, they played their guys too, Patrick. They played sweat and pain in there on the first drive of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, they had the Davis kid, the first-round pick that they picked from Vanderbilt in there. So they had all their guys in the starting lineup. It's going to come down to, I hate to keep bringing on this, it's going to come down to, are they good enough up front? I think that's a concern. Are they going to be talented enough in the offensive line? And, you know, are they going to be able to count on Wentz to give them what they need to give them? I think that's really the question mark. You know, can he make the throws that he has to make under pressure?
Okay, let's start there with Carson Wentz, with Al Galdi. You can learn about the Commanders on the Al Galdi podcast, and he joins us now here on the Lombardi Line. I'll get to Gibson in a second, but Michael set it up perfectly. Carson Wentz, your reaction to his performance, not just week one, Al, but so far leading up in camp.
Yeah, so I thought he had an encouraging performance on Saturday. I mean, I don't want to make too big of a deal out of it, but, you know, I thought it was solid. There's been a lot of talk in the D.C. area about how he's done at training camp. And he's been up and down. And there have been some practices at which he's been woefully inaccurate, and there have been others at which he's actually done a pretty good job. I think some of this has had to do with padded practices versus non-padded practices. And when they put the pads on and the offensive linemen have been able to engage more, Carson has looked better, and I don't think that that's coincidental. But there's no doubt. I mean, if you know Carson Wentz, as you guys do. I mean, there is a history of inaccuracy. A lot of the metrics back that up. And so what you're hoping for is that the inaccuracy isn't, you know, so great that, like, you can't be productive. Because one thing about Wentz is he can be productive even, you know, if the accuracy isn't, you know, at, like, peak Drew Brees level. So I thought what we saw on Saturday was he was efficient. If you look at his time to throw from snap to throw, it actually was less than what it was on an average basis last year. So he seemed to be making quick decisions. I mean, he and the passing offense weren't dynamic on Saturday by any stretch, but he made good decisions. He made completions. Their third offensive drive, his final drive of the game, ended up being a touchdown drive. And, you know, I think the important thing with Wentz when it comes to the Commanders is this.
He left us on a cliffhanger. That was a tease in the business. Al Galdi did a good job helping us up until that point. So we'll get him reconnected. Reaction to what he said about Wentz. We had heard reports, and we'll get Al back, Michael, but we had heard reports that he was a little inaccurate. He had a lot of picket-type passes in that first, a lot of extended handoffs, no, for Carson Wentz in week one of the preseason.
I mean, I think the other thing we have to stop is this evaluation of practice. Like, you want practice to have mistakes in it. You want practice to be able to do something where you can coach off of it. You want practice to be able to not be a rehearsal, right? Everybody thinks practice is a rehearsal. It's not. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have blown coverages. You're going to make, you know, guys are going to drop the ball. Plus, there's guys rotating in and out of the game that you don't know. And so we have Al back. We can go to him. But I think, to me, I'm more worried about the games than I are the practices.
Yeah, and we do bring Al back to finish up your thoughts there on Carson Wentz, Al.
Yeah, I think just the important thing with him and the Commanders is the Commanders have had really bad quarterback play over the last four seasons. Like, not since Kirk Cousins' final season with the team 2017 has the team had anything close to good quarterback play. And so if Wentz can just be decent, you know, like, obviously long-term, you need a franchise guy. You want someone who's better than decent. But for this team this season, there's a lot of pressure on the team to do well, to make the playoffs, to have a winning season for the first time since 2016. If he can just be top 15-ish, top 17-ish, I think that can be good enough for the Commanders this coming season.
Al, I want to ask you, where are you with the offensive line? I mean, do you feel like that they have improved? I know they bring Trey Turner in, who was with Marty Herney in Carolina, and he was obviously with Rivera there too. Hasn't really played well in the last 3 years, whether it be with the Chargers or even in Pittsburgh last year. So where are you with this offensive line as they try to remake it?
Yeah, so there's kind of an overriding philosophy that I have with the offensive line, and I know others in the area have too, and that is in John Matsko, we trust. Their offensive line coach, John Matsko, who, as you know, has been in the NFL forever, was with Ron in Carolina for years. The last two seasons has basically turned water into wine. The team has had a lot in the way of injury on the offensive line, has had to go with a lot of makeshift lineups with the offensive line. And yet still somehow the offensive line has ended up doing pretty well, especially last season. I mean, if you look at some of the ESPN win rate metrics, the offensive line for Washington last season was elite, and that was with the team being down to a fourth-string center as the season went on. That was with the team missing right guard Brandon Sheriff for a good chunk of the season, missing right tackle Samuel Cosmi for a good chunk of the season. Now, look, on paper, I mean, there are some reasons for concern. Like you said, Trey Turner, he's supposed to be the team starting right guard. He's not had a great last few years, and he's been missing a lot of time lately with a quadriceps injury. So there's a concern there. I mentioned Samuel Cosmi, the right tackle. He's talented. When he played last season, he played well, but he didn't play a lot last season. He missed a lot of time last year due to injury. The team did get good production from Charles Leno Jr. at left tackle last season. He's been durable, but he is older. The team starting center, Chase Roullier, is coming off a bad leg injury, and he didn't play in the preseason game this past Saturday, so, you know, we don't know to what extent he'll be 100% to begin the season. So, you know, there's a belief in Matsko and that he can coach the backups up. There is a depth with this offensive line. The team brought back a key swing tackle in Cornelius Lucas, re-signed him in the offseason. But I know this, too. So Carson Wentz has a tendency to hold on to balls for a while. That can make an offensive line not look so great. That is something that we're all kind of wondering about is, okay, the offensive line has graded out well the last two seasons. But now with a quarterback who tends to hold on to the ball for a while, could that maybe expose his line a little bit, especially if, you know, some of the new guys like a Trey Turner, like an Andrew Norwell aren't great, if some of the injuries start to catch up with the team. So, you know, I think there's a confidence in the line, but I think there also is an element of, like, to be determined, because let's see things here with a quarterback who, again, has a history of holding on to balls for longer than other quarterbacks.
Al, I got 2 minutes here. Michael has pointed out this Commanders defense has not been good. The names are there, but the performance, the production hasn't been there. Give us an outlook on 2022, and is Del Rio in trouble there?
I think he could be. I think the biggest thing that the defense has going for it is that the schedule is a lot easier, at least on paper. I mean, we know how the NFL is. You know, what you think today could be totally not true tomorrow. But they faced a brutal schedule last season in terms of overall offenses, in terms of opposing quarterbacks. The schedule this season looks to be a lot more manageable. The team didn't make many significant changes, really any significant changes, at defense in the offseason. It's basically the same cast of characters. What the team is banking on, and I don't think it's necessarily foolish, but is just everyone being back, you know, kind of going with this continuity approach, people getting the system more. There was a lot of miscommunication and a lot of misplay in the secondary over the first 8 games of last season. The secondary was better over the second half of last season, and the team is very much counting on that being the case. It's interesting, too, the team did just fire its defensive line coach, Sam Mills III. The defensive line has been good, but not as good as it should be, given the presence of 4 first-round picks. Both Chase Young and Montez Sweat had disappointing seasons last season. And so I think that's notable. I mean, it's not normal to fire a position coach 2 weeks into training camp, and yet the Commanders just did that. So I think the defense will be better if for no other reason than the schedule is more manageable. I do think that there's talent on this defense. I don't think that the talent last season played up to its capability. That's why I do think Del Rio could be in trouble. But I think in the NFL right now, I think schedule and who you're facing in terms of opposing quarterbacks just means so much in terms of how good you are defensively. And I think for those reasons, the defense should be better this coming season.
Commanders news all year long on the Al Galdi podcast. Al Galdi, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you, buddy.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Thank you, Al.
He said what you said about the defense, but also about the opposing quarterbacks as well. I think Del Rio's in trouble there, Michael.
Well, if they don't improve, I mean, you know, I get his point about continuity and communication critical. But if you can't straighten that out during the season, how are you going to straighten it out now? I don't get that.
Hey, there's nobody better at covering the Cowboys than your boy, Brian Brodus, who we've had on a bunch. He's the best, and he's going to join us next year on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, of course, it was a 17-7 loss for the Cowboys week one of the preseason as we welcome you back here on the Lombardi Line. I'm Patrick Maher. He is Michael Lombardi. Brian Brodus, old Buckethead. Is that what we call it? I can't remember the nickname. Was it Buckethead?
Buckethead, yeah. It's the Bucket. Yeah. We call him Bucket. Yeah. 1-800-BUCKET. Just dial it. He'll answer.
He's the best at covering the Cowboys there on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, of course, a former longtime scout. Cross paths with Michael Lombardi many a time. We welcome Brian. Hi, Brian.
I finally made the big time, boys. Good to talk to you again. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, we want to start this off with LSU news. Did you see that Miles Brennan didn't win the starting job and he's transferring out or leaving school? Did you expect this to happen?
You know, it's funny, Michael. You know, the thing that's been really good, the information that's coming out of Baton Rouge as of late, has been the recruiting class for 2023. You know, Brian Kelly's really done a nice job of putting together staff. Actually, excuse me, not staff, but a good roster. He's actually had some kids that were some receivers and stuff like that were, you know, 4- and 5-star recruits from the Baton Rouge area. They're actually staying home. So, That's a very, very exciting news. You know, Miles Brennan has always been one of those guys that, you know, you appreciate all the things that he brought to the table. And I'm trying to be really nice about this, but they've got better quarterbacks on that roster right now. And Miles Brennan was a guy that suffered. Yeah, he suffered an injury. You know, there was talk about him leaving. There was a talk about him giving up football. There was all this kind of talk going on about that. And, you know, then he came back and, So this is probably the end that was meant to be, because, you know, again, they've got more talented guys on there. And, hey, I wish Miles Brennan the best. You know, it didn't work out for him like he probably thought it would be, but, you know, that happens in this day and age.
Yeah, six-year senior. They've got Jaden Daniels and others, as Brian just mentioned. And I don't think it's a huge – no offense to him.
No.
Brian, you were very diplomatic. I don't think it's a huge loss that Brennan's going to leave the program. Now, the Cowboys, let's start with not just week one, Brian, of the preseason and the loss where they were sloppy, but what's the take from camp thus far on the Cowboys?
Well, the take was that – going into the season, it was going to be about grit and toughness and all those things. And, you know, they were at times you felt like, well, the defense is showing grit and toughness here. There were several of those practices where, you know, I was watching and, you know, you can watch, you know, Michael and, you know, Patrick, you guys talk about offensive line play, defensive line play, the blue chips, the red chips. You guys talk about those guys. And, you know, this Cowboys defense under Dan Quinn, they made some huge strides last year. I mean, this time last year we were all like, oh heck, if they could just have a top 15 defense, they'll be fine. You know, Dan Quinn, you know, but he delivered, and a lot of the players delivered. You know, and so defense, watching them practice, they're well coached. They don't make a lot of mistakes. You know, scheme wise or assignment wise. And so you're like thinking, okay, well, if the offense could just kind of catch up here. But they talked about grit and toughness, and they practiced against Denver on a Thursday, and they didn't show grit and toughness, really didn't, you know. And it's been hard. It's been hard for the offense. They struggle to run the ball against their own defense. They struggle to run the ball against the Broncos on Thursday. But, you know, the game came around, and, you know, with a couple of starters in the lineup, they were able to show some physicality, and I thought they did a really nice job on both sides of the ball, really kind of limiting what the Broncos were doing running and then what the Cowboys were able to do. The Cowboys are just going to have to strive for more balance. I mean, that's the thing that they really, really need the most. When Dak Prescott's numbers are like 24 of 29 for 261 and two touchdowns, they usually win games. It's when he has to throw the ball a ton that they get in trouble. But, yeah, it's about balance. It's about grit. It's about toughness. They actually showed some of that. They didn't show very much discipline, which is another problem that they run into as well.
Yeah, and my question twofold. All right, so what's McCarthy going to do about cutting down the penalties since he doesn't call the plays and he's watching, right?
Right.
And then second, Are you a little concerned based on what Cooper Rush looked like in that game that he could be the backup quarterback? Don't you think there's a need for a backup quarterback in Dallas?
Yeah, Mike, you definitely have been watching Cowboy football here as of late because, you know, Will Greer has actually the dirty little secret that nobody really was talking about was at training camp there was a battle for the backup quarterback spot. Will Greer, you know, he was recruited by Doug Nussmeier. He ended up in West Virginia. Doug Nussmeier recruited him to Florida. And so there's a little bit of sponsorship going on in that room. Now, the people will tell you that Will Greer has to win the job. Well, he's practicing well enough to win the job. But then he had a groin injury the other day, you know, before they went to Denver, and it set him back. And so he didn't get to practice or play in the game. And, you know, that with and I was broadcasting the game with Brad Sham on the Cowboy Radio Network, and I was just saying, gosh, I just wish – that Will Greer was healthy enough because, you know, you could see there was an opportunity for him to make some real headway. You know, there is a definitely concern. People will tell you that Cooper Rush did a great job in the Minnesota game last year, you know, when Dak was out after the calf injury against New England. But, you know, there needs to be better quarterback play. And Will Greer has done that in practice. So that was kind of the sneaky little thing that nobody was really, really talking about. But just from my eye, there's definitely a battle there. You know, now the whole thing with the penalties, I mean, McCarthy, that's another one of those things. He acts like he's not, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's the preseason. Oh, I'm like, well, damn, Mike. I mean, you know, it's, you know, you had the most penalties in the league, you know, preseason week one. I mean, I get it, but, you know, do you talk about these things? I mean, they, you know, they have officials. They have high school officials. They had Pac-12 officials out there. They had, you know, they had NFL officials out there. You know, I mean, there's always officials at these practices, and you know, and they talk about it. They say, okay, well, the, hey, coach us up on this, coach us up on that. But then they got, you know, they got like, it's not just, it's just not like rookies that make these mistakes. It's like veteran guys. You know, it's Terrell Basham on a 3rd and 12 getting a roughing the passer penalty. You know, it's Kelvin Joseph lining up off sides on a field goal attempt right before the half that's no good, but then they get to kick it again and they make it. You know, that's the kind of stuff that they're going through right now. And I tell you, there's a lot of lip service without talking about the penalties, but, you know, and McCarthy's the one. He was responsible. He's been here now 3 years. A lot of these players he's brought in. You know, were they, are they disciplined enough? Are they football intelligent enough? That seems to be the answer seems to be no right now.
Michael, I want you to jump in with your question. I just want to follow up. Brian and Michael nailed it. Led the NFL with 127 penalties, the Cowboys in 2021. Finished with 17 in week one for 129 yards. That's sloppy for McCarthy's team there, Michael Lombardi.
Yeah, no doubt. And like, you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And so, like, the left guard, right, who they drafted in the first round comes into the league with a holding reputation, and he gets a holding call in the first game. So, you know, like, what are we doing here? Are we putting mittens on them? Are we not letting them hold in practice? Like, what are we doing to curtail it? And if you're not calling the plays in the game and you're kind of monitoring the control of the game, that's got to put some concern on you. To me, I've never understood it. McCarthy, Brian, speak to that. I mean, he was running the offense in Green Bay. What does he do game day that is different than anybody? He just watches with you and I, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's really what it is, Mike. And, you know, the whole thing about it is, you know, they had Kellen Moore here, you know, as, you know, under the Jason Garrett administration. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where he didn't want to come in. He didn't want to install an offense. The defense last year, like I said, made huge strides. The offense halfway through the season just kind of completely fell apart. Now, there were some games, okay, against the Commanders and the Eagles JV team at the end where they scored points, but they couldn't run the ball. They couldn't pass the ball. Like, there were a lot of things they couldn't do. And you're thinking, well, McCarthy's an offensive coach. Why does he not try and help Kellen Moore get back on track with some play calling, or maybe take it away from him and say, hey, listen, I'm going to give it. But Mike doesn't want to do that. He always talks about, oh, delegating and this and that. Well, to be honest with you, Mike doesn't want to, he doesn't want to put in an offense. He doesn't want to coach the offense. He doesn't want to learn the offense. I mean, it's almost like you're just allowing things to happen. And then we wonder why, oh, why that happened? Well, because you're not, it's not an attention to detail thing to you. He's done a great job of keeping his team healthy, but that's really the best thing that you could say about Mike McCarthy right now.
Wow. Okay, it's 105.3 The Fan. We're going to have our buddy awesome. Brian brought us on during the regular season. Old Buckethead will join us during the regular season. There's nobody better at covering the Cowboys than Brian. Thank you, B. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you, buddy. Have a great one.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, you guys take care. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. I think it was important the way that he laid that conversation out, because they led the league in penalties, and then they got penalized 17 times in week one. Like, never
and unforced errors. I mean, you line up offsides.
Unforced.
Like, yeah, you line up offside. That you control that. Like, you know, you control, you know, what happens. Like, you, if you do that, you're not, there's not enough attention to detail. And I thought what he said about Quinn as it relates to the offense, for betters, that's really important.
Totally agree. I want to come back with their wide receivers. No Cooper, some injuries we need to discuss, and then I'll parlay that into a Packer wide receiver conversation. Great job by old Buckethead here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, of course, it's BetMGM with the loyalty program. Every time you make a bet over at BetMGM, you get wager reward points redeemable for online bonuses converted into comps at MGM Resorts nationwide. It's pretty simple. Like your credit card, anytime you make a bet, you start accruing points, and you can use those points for free bets, dining, shows, anything you want. It's a great deal. Make sure you check it out over at the King of Sportsbooks, BetMGM. Got to be 21 years or older. 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. Okay, we're back here. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher here. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So we'll do this for our buddy and our boss, John Goulet, who's probably got more things to worry about because he just had a kid. Congratulations, of course. Yes, but
no sleep.
We have to talk about the Cowboys. And then I have, before we go, I have to give you the story about Melvin Gordon that Santos just passed along to me, which is hilarious. But first, let's start with that wide receiver depth chart at the Cowboys. You know, CeeDee Lamb, well, and I'll give you the numbers, I'll give you the props, Michael, but CeeDee Lamb was stud, Amari Cooper gone. And the one thing I would say is, you know, Gallup's recovering from that injury. This is dubious.
Right. You know, and they still have Dalton Schultz, right? So they got him a tight end. But I think what Brian was talking about it, and I think this is really important that we take the betting, he's watching practice every day, which we can't. And so then we need to translate his words or his evaluation into the betting. And I think what he was telling us was there's not a lot of physicality in this offensive line. The Tyler Smith kid who they drafted in the first round, you know, got called for holding. Tyron Smith, they got to hope he stays healthy. There's a lot of hoping going on with the Dallas offense because it isn't the same. When CeeDee Lamb was in the slot last year with Gallup and Amari Cooper on the outside and Dalton Schultz, he wasn't getting double-teamed. You know, and it resulted into a really good season for him. 6 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards, you know. But now he's going to be, where's CeeDee Lamb? Let's cover him. James Washington, who they signed as an economic value guy down the road, he injures his foot. He's out. Does that mean Jalen Tolbert, the kid they drafted in the third round, is ready to take that giant step forward? I don't know about that. I think you got to be concerned. I think Brian very eloquently put it out there. This offense is behind. And it doesn't have depth at quarterback. It doesn't have depth in the offensive line. And it doesn't have depth at receiver. And if you go there, that's why they're working Pollard at receiver. That's why they've been working Pollard at receiver. Because they got to get him on the field. I mean, could you imagine having, you know, putting Noah Brown, Tolbert, and CeeDee Lamb on the field and having Tony Pollard stand next to you? Tony Pollard's one of their top 5-7 players on their team. Right? He's one of their top 7, and you're not going to put him on the field?
He pops because he's fast, too. 1,100 yards last year for CeeDee Lamb. The expectations are sky high. 79 receptions over at DraftKings. His wide receiver prop set at 1,175.5. No surprise there for CeeDee Lamb. You mentioned Pollard. How about your expectations for Zeke this year?
I mean, look, I think Zeke, I keep wanting him to get more involved in the passing game and all those things. That's not going to happen. I think Zeke's got to show he's in better shape and that he can move piles more. You know, one thing you want to watch with running backs is, do they move the pile? Are they able to kind of, after contact, how many yards do they get? It doesn't have to be a 30-yard run. It has to be those 3 yards after contact are all the difference in punting on fourth down or having a first down. And so I want to see more physicality from Zeke. I want to see him move the piles more, and I want to see him be able to get to the outside a little bit. I think that's really important. And I also want to see him be utilized differently. That's one of my biggest knocks when you really break down Kellen Moore is his inability to feature players week in and week out. I mean, we talk about Sean McVay. He gets the ball to Cooper Kupp 81 times on third down. Like, everybody knows he's getting the ball, yet McVay gets him the ball. That I don't see that with the Dallas offense.
When you think the Cowboys, you think the conversation starts with Dak, and then we start talking about CeeDee, and we start talking about Zeke and Pollard. You think that offensive line, but the way that Brian laid it out, the defense is well ahead of the offense. The perception doesn't match the reality with this football team.
No, it's completely different. And, you know, they don't have those studs up front that they used to have where they could really dominate.
That's right.
You know, and now Steele came in and played well last year for them. Collins is gone. Smith's got to stay healthy. You know, Zach Martin's still a good player. So, but, you know, are they tough enough? I mean, part of the thing is you know, McCarthy, I don't understand it is his personality isn't in the offense. I mean, Mike's a tough guy from Pittsburgh. You know, like he's supposed to be, you know, that's supposed to be the identity. And yet he's got Kellen Moore running it. And Kellen Moore's going to control his future. I mean, look, you forget about Sean Payton down the road. You better hope Dan Quinn doesn't get your job. Because I can promise you, Dan Quinn's sitting there. You know, he was up for head coaching jobs this year. He's doing a hell of a job. It's going to be easy for Jerry to make that change. Put Dan Quinn in. I got Kellen Moore here to call plays. So, I mean, if I'm McCarthy, I want to get my personality into the team. You know, I got to cut down on these mistakes. We can't beat ourselves. You get a holding call, a false start, first and 15. It's hard.
I'm laughing as you say that because I'm looking at the DraftKings numbers in division, the NFC East. Cowboys, slight favorites at plus 140. The Eagles, plus 160. The Commanders, 5-1. And the Giants, 8-1. You can throw out the Giants, obviously. But how about that? I mean, that number continues to shorten. The Cowboys, the Eagles' love continues to grow, and the Cowboys shortening that number.
Look, I think the Eagles' love is legitimate. Outside of the quarterback position, I thought Dave Spadaro laid it out perfectly. What Dave Spadaro didn't say yesterday on our show was exactly what we all know, is that they're not sold on Jalen Hurts. If they were sold on Jalen Hurts, they would have extended his contract easily. They're not. They're going to wait it out. But what they've done, and credit to Philadelphia for this, is they built a good team around Jalen Hurts, something the Arizona Cardinals didn't do. So they've got a good team. I think they've got the best team in the East because I think they're going to have a hard time. Dallas is going to have a hard time blocking Philly if Philly stays healthy. They're going to have a hard time blocking Philly's front seven. Philly's front seven linebackers are much better this year than they were last year. And they're going to have a hard time blocking them. And if they have a hard time blocking them, and Dak, like Brian says, and they get behind and they don't have that balance where they can run it and throw it. Because remember, if you got Dalton Schultz at tight end, you're not running the ball behind him. He's not blocking very many people. So, you know, it was always the combination. It was Schultz with another tight end on the line. Now they've got a young player in there. I think there's a lot of work ahead of them. And they struggle to run the ball against Denver. They're going to struggle to run the ball against Philadelphia.
Eagles fans licking their chops at that plus 160 in division. Okay, we'll jump off this. Now, it doesn't look like nobody's padded up, so it doesn't look like an extensive practice here. But this is kind of funny that Santos just passed along. So a reporter reported that Melvin Gordon is working out with a pad on his right foot. The Broncos running back is dealing with a foot contusion. So I have the picture. He's catching a pass and he has a, looks like a lump on his right foot. And Melvin Gordon replied, ha ha, that's my cell phone, sir. So Melvin Gordon's working out with his cell phone in his socks, to which you can imagine there's 1 million replies on Twitter asking him why he's practicing with a cell phone in his socks. Is this common?
No. I mean, how does a cell phone get on the field? Did you see the baseball player that slid into third base and his cell phone came out?
Yeah, I did.
Do you see that on Twitter?
I think it was a
Padre player. It was a Major League Baseball player. Matt Santos, I don't know if you saw, the guy slides into third base, his telephone comes out, he's got to put it back in his pocket. Like, seriously, what? Are you missing a call on third base? Like, I'd like to get to third base. I don't care about the phone call. I mean, like, I'll get to third. I mean, seriously, you got to take your phone with you? We're nuts. We've lost our minds. We have lost our minds with all this stuff. We really have. I'm bad with my phone, I admit. I carry it with me everywhere I go. But, I mean, this is ridiculous. This is so bad.
Yeah, Castro with the Padres.
I bet you Melvin Gordon's one of those guys. I'll bet you, Patrick, Melvin Gordon's one of those guys that if you text him, he doesn't text you right back, even though he's taking his phone out to practice. I bet you he fits in that category.
Oh, well, I know one person that would like you to chill on that cell phone, and her name is Millie.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hey, before we say goodbye, like, if Belichick had a player with a cell phone in his sock during practice, I'm sure that would be eliminated pretty quickly, no?
That would end that. Yeah, that would end that. That first of all, there would be, look, we're not taking cell phones out to practice, okay? Like, do I have to explain that to you, too? Seriously.
How would you categorize Bill Belichick's texting abilities?
Very good. Outstanding, you know? And some an email ability, too. I mean, he can work within the communication bracket. There's not a problem for him.
Okay. Well, I just asked because we close out our week and I still have yet to get the phone number. So I just wanted to follow up. Anyway, enjoy your couple of days. I'm sure you're going to be writing a book or doing something. What do you have planned for this Monday?
I'm going to head out to the University of Arizona. Going to spend some time out there.
Oh,
and then
right.
I'm going to head to Las Vegas and come see you. And so, well, I come see the people in Vegas and watch a little football practice in the next few 4 or 5 days. So I'm kind of getting my football regiment going. So I'll be with you.
We'll travel safely, okay, Michael?
Thank you, Patrick.
Okay, we'll see you next time here on the Lombardi Line. Odds On is coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Remember, you can find Michael on his travels, M. Lombardi NFL, and you can find us at VSiN Live. We'll see you next time.